There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
HarperCollins presents Her Majesty's Royal Coven by Juno Dawson.
Neve, Helena, Elle, and Leonie, four lifelong friends who also happen to belong to the oldest coven in the United Kingdom. When oracles predict the genocide of all witches, the women must choose where their allegiances lie, with the coven or with each other. The New York Times called Her Majesty's Royal Coven superb and charming. From best-selling author Juno Dawson comes a brand new fantasy trilogy for fans of A Discovery of Witches or The Craft. Out now in hardback and audiobook, narrated by Nicola Coughlan, star of Bridgerton.
Her Majesty's Royal Coven by Juno Dawson.
Hi, and welcome to So I Got to Thinking, the weekly Sex and the City podcast, where we take the timeless questions of Carrie Bradshaw from Sex and the City and apply them to modern life and love. As ever, you are listening to, starting over yet again, Juno Dawson and reservations for one, Dylan B. Jones. Hi, Dylan.
Hi, Juno.
This week, we are joined by our first guest of season five. It's a friend of mine, the fantastic columnist, author, artist, performer, musician, spiritual guru. It's Rhiannon Stiles. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Juno. I was not expecting that. Hi, both of you. It's great to be here.
It's lovely to have you.
Rhiannon requested about 2 years ago to come in for this very specific episode. I think we invited Rhiannon on for season three, and you were like, no, I'm going to play the long game. Mm. I want to come on for season five, episode four. And we are true. A promise is a promise, and true to our word. Here we are, 2 years later, talking about that episode now. So before we launch into it, Dylan, do you want to open your little potted synopsis?
Yeah. So, it's a meaty episode, which, as we were saying just before we came on air, it's always good. It's always more fun for us and probably for the listeners when there's lots to talk about. So it's the infamous, possibly the most memorable element is Carrie walking in on Samantha getting blown by the UPS guy. Mm-hmm. Or Samantha blowing the UPS guy.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we missed that bit where he gently blew on her clitoris. That is.
I mean, that would have been better that way around.
What would Miranda have to say about that? Yeah.
As we'll see. Yeah. And Miranda goes to Weight Watchers and meets Matt from Weight Watchers.
Tom.
Big Boned, yes, thanks, Rhiannon. Mm-hmm. I knew it was some sort of monosyllabic male name.
Sam, Greg, Ted,
Kev. So Miranda meets Tom, some kind of interesting stuff around sexual etiquette ensues. And not a huge amount for Charlotte. She does some sponsored content for Amazon and struggles with she's still like a bit hung up on the fact that she's divorced, and she's like a bit down about that and feeling a bit of shame about that. So, yeah.
Yeah, basically Charlotte is not in this episode. Might as well state that right up front. The theme of the episode is judgment, being judgmental. The question that we will endeavour to answer this week is, should we judge a book by its cover? Now, this is why we've got Rhiannon on the podcast. Rhiannon is the author of two books, The New Girl and Help, I'm Addicted, both autobiographical, non-fiction titles, one of which has Rhiannon on the front, very Carrie, very Carrie-esque, and one of them does not have Rhiannon on the front. Like, how dare they? How dare they? But maybe the human face has dropped out of fashion, because actually there's not a lot of non-fiction with human faces on now. If you look at similar titles by, say, Sean Fay, Sean Fay's visage is not to be seen anywhere on her book either. So go on, Rhiannon, tell us about, I guess, your experiences of coming up with the cover for The New Girl.
Well, actually, at the time, I was a columnist for Elle magazine, and that was also called The New Girl. It ran for 2 years. And that picture that was on that cover was taken to support the column. And I think in 2015, I didn't really have many other choices. I was newly into my transition. This was a fabulous picture that was taken by a professional photographer. And it just seemed to work. And nowadays I look at it, I'm like, oh my God, is that really me? Like, once you're stuck with your face on your cover, like there's no forgetting it.
No.
And I wouldn't say necessarily like I chose that image particularly, but also I remember on the day of the actual shoot for Elle magazine, it was one of those scenarios where clearly, and this happens a lot sometimes in shoots and fashion, clearly a stylist has never dressed a trans person before, and they bring...
I'm triggered by that sentence because, yes, true.
Can we do a bing bong bing trans corner?
Bing bong bing.
Oh yeah, trans corner. Absolutely. I don't think we've been to trans corner yet this season.
I'm not sure we have, no.
Here we are. Now we've got double bubble. Okay, so... Yeah, so I turned up for the shoot and the clothes they'd chosen, you know, my proportions are different to maybe some cis women's bodies. And so some of the clothes they chose, the dresses didn't really fit. So I chose this kind of green outfit, which complemented my kind of like ginger hair very well. But it's not something that I would necessarily say was very timeless or classic or that I would choose now. But you're kind of left with that at the end of the day. And it's what it is. You have to sort of embrace it, I suppose. So I kind of think Carrie's right in being very particular about how she is perceived on the front cover of the book.
Oh, 100%. I am incredibly picky. Mm-hmm. I mean, never in my career have I been invited into my publishing house to be shown a mock-up of a cover. Normally you just emailed a JPEG.
Because you were on the cover of one of your books, The Gender Games.
Yeah, Gender Games. Yeah. Yes. So that was slightly different. So that was, normally, in my experience, your editor, you just get this out of nowhere. You'll just be having a perfectly ordinary day. It sounds like a horror story. It was just a normal day. And you refresh your inbox and it's just like, Her Majesty's Royal Coven, cover design. And you're like, oh, fucking hell. And you go and you get yourself a stiff drink. And with trepidation, you click on the JPEG because I'm not going to say some of my covers I have adored. And actually, Her Majesty's Royal Coven is one of the ones that as soon as I opened it, I was like, oh my God, yes. Just yes. Mm. 100% no notes. I sign off on this. With some of them, the sad sinking feeling you get is not fun. Like in it as well, because they've had your book. They've had the rights to your book for 6 months. And sometimes there is a bit of an element of, you've had this for 6 months. Like, it's a red square with some writing on, Jill. Like, I don't understand. I mean, and I know, obviously, cover designers at publishing houses, they are working on lots and lots and lots of covers. They are underpaid, like everyone in publishing. It's a nightmare. But sometimes you are, because... The cover, and this is, I agree with Rhiannon, this is why Carrie is so right to be particular about the cover, because the cover is what goes out into the world. Before anyone decides to buy your book, or before anyone decides to read your book, the first thing they see is the cover. And it makes such a difference. And if you have a shit cover, and I have had some shit covers, then you're the dick who's got to sit next to it for a year as well, like sort of on social media saying, hey guys, here's the cover for my book. Do you love it?
And also, I bet people, in fact, I know people don't understand how these things work. So people will think it was you that chose the cover and like created the cover. Like I imagine a lot of people think that, which I bet makes it even more frustrating.
Which is why it's interesting that Carrie has so much of a say, actually. In my experience, if particularly marketing, so these are the people who have spoken to Barnes & Noble and Waterstones, because what's scary is Barnes & Noble and Waterstones have seen your cover before you have. You are the last person to see it. And so what would probably happen, actually, is Courtney and... what's the other one that's Courtney and... we forget Molly Shannon's character.
Molly Shannon and Amy Sedaris.
And Sedaris. The publishers. They would have just said, well, unfortunately for you, Carrie, Barnes & Noble think this cover is amazing, so this is what we're going with.
So we're doing it.
And she would have just had to tolerate being naked on Fifth Avenue hailing a cab.
What do you both think of that cover? Because, I mean, it's basically a rip-off of Madonna's sex book, isn't it, that came out, like, in 93 or something.
I just thought it was so comical. But, like, such a cheap but quite good visual gag, like, with the photoshopped bobblehead on it. I did laugh. And I also loved when she was like, no, and, like, Amy Sedaris is like, oh, no is really good, we're looking for a strong reaction. And it's like...
we don't want the strong reaction to be no.
and then Molly Shannon's like, oh, I totally understand, Carrie, and then turns to her and's like, we're fucked. I completely was on Carrie's side with that as well. It was about the only time in this episode that I was on Carrie's side.
I was just about to say, that's as far as my patience extended to. And I would sooner die. I have had the no, I would sooner die moment. The Gender Games cover was similar. It was a similar thing, I think, where a bit like this one with Carrie, whereby they wanted me on the cover. They knew very, very clever editor called Kate Hewson wanted this idea of a flip book. You know, like when you flip over the little segments and you can be like a builder or a ballerina or a sort of a cowboy or whatever. And to sort of represent all different sort of facets of gender. And so we did have a dedicated photo shoot. I've forgotten the name of the photographer. That's really dreadful. She's very successful. I want to say Tori something, maybe. She was really good. And I had to take about like 30 outfits in like a big, massive like holiday suitcase, because the idea is they would take multiple pictures of me wearing lots of different outfits and then chop them all up. But again, this was before I'd had any facial feminization. So knowing what I know now, I might have been a bit more sort of like, will I want a record of my face to exist many years from now? And the hardback, I'm not sure that, I think possibly the hardback's gone out of print, which is quite normal, but the paperback is still very much in print. So we are now, that book came out 2017, so we are now, 5 or 6 years later? And a lot of people think that's what I look like. Triggering. Again, triggered.
It's interesting. I mean, I'm interested in this, and feel free to, not say anything if you don't know, obviously. If you were to say to the publishers, I want to shoot another cover, would that be a thing that could happen? Do you think or not?
I think for me, it wouldn't have been, because they didn't have the budget to facilitate that. And I think actually the professional photographer that they chose, they also had to pay him a certain fee, and then they negotiated those fees also, because he was like, hang on a minute, you're using this picture on the cover of a book. That wasn't the intent. That wasn't the original intended purpose. So I think it probably depends on the deal and the publishers, which you have. I mean, I think Carrie's very lucky to be able to kind of have real creative control over her front cover.
And again, that's one of those little clues as to, and this is something we'll discuss further on next year as well, where there's this sliding scale of just how famous is Carrie Bradshaw, which it's hard to tell. At one point she says, you know, she's the scrappy little sex column they run next to the ads for penile enlargement. But then in season 6, she's being invited to premieres and everybody in Prada knows who she is. And so it's kind of, you know, her advance from France, her massive advance from France comes through. And And so it's difficult to know how famous Carrie is. Really.
And also, fame then was very different to fame now. So, I think people... I don't know, I feel like people can become famous more easily now with social media. Like, she wasn't on social media then.
No.
She would have... If she was, a 30-year-old sex columnist now, would be, on Instagram and stuff like that. And would probably have, a few hundred... She'd probably have, a few hundred thousand followers on Instagram, maybe. That level. But it's difficult, isn't it, to compare, to quantify.
It's interesting.
Mm. And also, that's the thing. Back then, there wasn't Instagram. So nowadays, I suppose people are designing book covers, which look great through social media. That wasn't also something you had to consider in, 2001 when it was.
Because it's interesting that Dolly Alderton, who is, I guess... the nouveau Carrie Bradshaw for 2022, her face is not on her books. Whereas 10 years ago, Caitlin Moran's face was on her books, on all of her books. And again, what's interesting is in the period between Rhiannon's two books, we're clearly in the age of typography. So I wonder if now... Although, yeah, because did we see Carrie's book cover in this season? Oh, we did. It was awful, wasn't it? And Just Like That, we saw her new book cover and it was in front of a spooky lake. Can you remember?
Oh, yeah.
About bereavement with the words flirting over a spooky lake. kind of Mr. Big's gone to the lake, kind of. even Carrie. Carrie's not on her books anymore. So, yeah, we're in a different age.
Do you think she just had one pop at that cover and that was it then?
Maybe. I'm trying to think.
Possibly.
We do think in the films, we see all of her books on a bookshelf.
She's generally had really bad luck with photo shoots. So there was the Single and Fabulous cover.
Yeah.
And then there was her naked on the side
of
the bus.
Her naked on the bus, yeah.
And I feel like it's not her thing, is it?
So let's put this deranged conversation into perspective. so as ever we'll start with Carrie, as we often do.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of ground to cover in this, because really this episode is a culmination of things we have long since suspected here on So I Got to Thinking, which is Carrie is a dreadful prude and has no business being a sex columnist. Discuss.
Yes.
here. Totally.
Absolutely. So the first thing that springs to mind is when Carrie's trying on the... So for listeners who don't remember, Samantha helps Carrie PR her book and helps style Carrie. And Carrie wears an outfit that Samantha recommends and comes out and says, "This screams hooker. What respectable New York woman would be caught dead wearing this?" Carrie, a sex columnist, basically just called sex workers trash with that. while there was a sex worker standing right there, Marcus was standing right there.
Oh, she didn't know he was a sex worker.
That's
at
true.
That point, to be fair.
That's true. But yeah. And she also gaslights Samantha as well, which was the worst bit for me. She's being all arch with her down the phone, and then Samantha's like, "Are you okay?" And Carrie's like, "Oh, I'm fine."
I also that particular scene you just mentioned, Dylan, when Carrie comes out of the dressing room wearing that marabou furry thing, is when Carrie says, "Ladies our age need to cover
up." Thank you.
I'm just like, how old are you? 35?
She's 36. She had her birthday 2 weeks ago. That woman is 36 years old. Heaven help her on a beach.
It's ridiculous.
I like to think that when it first aired somewhere, Madonna was watching it just cackling with a martini.
Time for ladies our age to cover up. Why don't you just fuck off, Carrie? Just fuck off right now. Signed, Juno Dawson, 41 years old.
Exactly. Me and Juno are in our 40s. We're older than Carrie. And I'm just shook. I'm shook that she would say that. Literally ridiculous.
Just so conservative. Even in that first conversation with her editors, she's no matter how stressed I am, I always find time to put the clothes on my body before I step out the door. And then she is prissy about Samantha. I mean, I would have thought that was hysterical. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have stayed to watch, but, you know, I would have just gone and sat in the waiting room, just be like, I'll be here when you're finished. Yeah. Or better still, I'll meet you at the restaurant. Just go down and order, go get a cocktail, and she will see you when she has finished.
I was trying to think if things like that have happened ever with me and my friends before, and it has once, and I won't name him, but it has once, and it was pretty much exactly how you said you'd react, you know, like, I was just kind of like, oh, hi, and then, like, very quickly left.
Where did this encounter take place?
It was on holiday.
Oh, okay.
So I came back to where we were staying. Mm-hmm. And it was going on, and I said, oh, hi, and just left, and then WhatsApped him saying, I'm at this bar, and then he, like, walked through the door, and the first thing we did was we just, like, both burst out laughing. but yeah, like, it's fine, like, we're all adults, like, these things happen sometimes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, Samantha is Carrie's best friend. Carrie knows exactly what Samantha's like. Mm. I mean, in that scene, what I love is Kim Cattrall's acting. She's so superb when she does this camp seductress kind of like style. And SJP's also great when she just kind of plays this fool and bangs into doors and everything.
Yeah,
like
she's
that.
Good at that. She's really good at that.
Yeah, she's very good at that. But with that scene in general, I was just like, A, Carrie didn't knock and walked into her friend's office. So in a way, it's kind of like, it's her fault from the very beginning that she disturbed Samantha giving somebody a blowjob, in my eyes anyway.
Yeah, I feel like the other girls make fun of Samantha for saying, like she says, oh, it was in my office. And Miranda's like, in your office, right. But I don't know, like, your office is your private place to work, I suppose.
Yeah. It's interesting that Kim Cattrall would later say that she didn't like these storylines, that she did find them a little degrading, and that's particularly she said that she was very dissatisfied with her thread in Sex and the City 2, where obviously it culminates with her, you know, she is arrested for public indecency, but then she has sex on the bonnet of a car, and she was like, is this the best you can do with a character that I've played for the best part of 20 years, kind of? And so I understand her frustration. But on this occasion, it felt like the first time they'd really done it. And as well, I just think in the people versus Samantha Jones, you know, she's going to be found not guilty. Lest we forget, 2 years ago, Kim Cattrall, freshly manicured, had to fish a diaphragm out of Carrie Bradshaw's vagina. And, you know, that's how close these women are. Is it really that shocking, Carrie, that your friend, who you know is very sex positive, is pleasuring her burly Worldwide Express delivery man? Mm. I mean, really? And what really pisses me off more than anything is that Carrie gets away with it. In the end, Samantha comes round to Carrie's way of thinking because she sees Stanford getting a blowy from Marcus. And Samantha's like, oh my gosh, now I too understand how scandalous it is to witness a blowjob.
Yeah.
I mean, Carrie apologises, I suppose.
That really pissed me off as well, because I didn't remember how the episode ended. And I thought, oh, like, this is really pissing me off at the moment, but in the end, Carrie's going to apologise. And then when it ended, I was like, what? She's gotten away with it. But she does say, make no mistake, it's not my style, but I really admire your ability to put your sex life out there. So she at least says that. But why does she have an issue with someone putting that?
Why does she have a job as a sex columnist?
She's a sex columnist. She's a sex columnist.
I wish we could actually like read more of Carrie's columns in the actual TV show, because like if your friend was like Samantha, that is like sex column gold. Like you're being given all this beautiful stuff to write about. Like why wouldn't you utilize it rather than just be so judgmental about it? It doesn't make any sense.
Can you imagine her column? Hi, New York. Make no mistake, I don't really like sex. However, I heard once some people did have sex.
One thing I did like about this, the Samantha and Carrie stuff, was I thought it portrayed really well like how rifts can happen between friends. So like it starts off with like a little blunt comment, like when Carrie's a little bit off on the phone, and then Samantha's a little bit off as well, and Carrie sort of hangs up and goes, and she sort of detects that. I guess now the equivalent would be like someone replying okay full stop on WhatsApp or something, and you're a bit like, oh, like you sort of know something's wrong. I thought they portrayed that quite well.
It's interesting knowing everything we know now about SJP and Kim Cattrall. Do you think like they held Kim Cattrall hostage on that soundstage until she agreed to say the line, "Isn't she fabulous?" Mm-hmm. And it was like some sort of punishment. Look, it's in the script. You've got to stand around with all the attention on Carrie, and then you've got to say, "Isn't she fabulous?" which I know that was interestingly, that very moment was when one of my friends stopped watching. She was like, "This is fucking ridiculous." Like,
oh, wow.
No, this is just, this is, it almost becomes just very, I mean, self-congratulatory kind of like the sense of, if you read between the lines, they're almost saying, "God, isn't Carrie Bradshaw fabulous?" And you're a bit kind of like, okay.
No.
Sure. Okay.
I mean, that's just testament to Kim Cattrall's acting, isn't it? That she's able to like step beyond the she's able to be professional and step beyond the personal to deliver such like a beautiful moment like that.
That's true. And I sort of almost got goosebumps despite myself from that final cover shoot scene, just because there was the music and it was Sex and the City and she was posing. And I mean, Juno, we're both hypocrites because it was this very scene that inspired the artwork that our listeners are looking at right now. So,
gosh, yeah, the hours to make my hair go that curly. My hair is not that naturally curly. Again, a picture. They're just lies. That is not me. That's not my hair. Those are neither my boobs or legs anymore either.
I mean, for me, Samantha Jones is like one of the best dressed women in the TV show. Like, if we just for a moment put Patricia Field aside and imagine that Samantha's choosing her own outfits, she's incredible, like the things she wears. So I'm actually very surprised the things she would pull in for Carrie, knowing both how their style choices. Doesn't that seem weird? I mean, it's obviously used as kind of the arc in the narrative to further kind of reinforce this rift between two friends. But at the same time, like, I just don't quite believe Samantha would pull those clothes.
No, me either. Samantha has amazing taste. And
that's a good point.
And practically as well, the Marabou trim see-through nighty is a real choice, because more so than at any other point in this season, you can really, really see that Carrie is pregnant. So it's a strange choice to... There was one in Atlantic City as well, which sort of exposed her midriff. And I can see what they were trying, but it would have been... There are so many other things they could have put her in, but I think Rhiannon's right that, you know, we've seen Samantha in the most extraordinary lingerie and slips and 90s. But apparently she does have that Marabou trim one in red, apparently. So who knew?
I love Marcus just saying, it's not very modern.
Oh, Marcus. Well, at one point we will do a deep dive on
Justice for Marcus.
On Marcus. Justice for poor Marcus, who somewhere between season 6 and the film,
gone.
Who knows? Never to be mentioned again.
And also, this episode really reminded me how good Stanford is and how sad it is that he's just disappeared. He died and then just disappeared from the show. Yeah. It's really sad.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, and this is the first time in a while that we've seen him. When was he last? It was season 4 we last saw him, I think.
I think you could very well be right. I would need to do a check. All that glitters. Carrie briefly goes out with Murray Bartlett. Emmy-nominated Murray Bartlett. Let's take a little break. And when we come back, we will deal with... Again, there's no Charlotte this week, but we will deal with Miranda, Weight Watchers, and try to answer this ridiculous question.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi, and welcome back to So I Got to Thinking. This week we are watching the season 5 episode Cover Girl, and we're joined by our special guest Rhiannon Stiles. So, is there anything else we would like to say about Carrie being just a judgy, horrible witch? or shall we move on?
Also, I think that for me also, when they're in the restaurant having their lunch, Carrie's outfit that day is not the best also. So it's kind of like pot kettle black, isn't it? When she actually does pull Samantha aside for the choices she's made. I looked at Carrie that day and thought, that is not a good choice.
Was it awesome. the Sex Pistols Vivian Westwood thing?
Yes.
Not very Carrie.
She doesn't do punk very well, no.
No. And when she walks in on Samantha, she's wearing a beret and a poncho.
I loved that. I loved that one. I loved the beret with the big off shoulder. I would wear that. I wouldn't wear a heel around my flat, which is what I noticed later.
You like a beret on Carrie?
I like a beret on Carrie. I can't wear hats. I've got a weird head.
Oh, I was going to say as well, just very, we can't talk about this storyline without the iconic Samantha quote, "I will not be judged by your society. I will wear and blow whomever I want as long as I can breathe and kneel." Mm. Iconic.
I had never noticed, in all the times I've watched this episode, I had never noticed Samantha's knees cracking as she got off the floor, which is...
That was great.
Chillingly accurate as a woman in your 40s. I was kind of like, oh, yep, that's reminiscent of reality, yeah. But just a lovely, lovely little touch. So it's a shame because sometimes they get things so right and there is that attention to detail. Mm. But then, at another point, what I wish... Possibly. So in the dream, so again, if I had a do-over with this episode, what would have been nice in the end is perhaps more pathos from Carrie saying, I'm jealous because I don't have your confidence. You know, I wish I did. You know, I used to wear what I wanted. I used to suck off a million guys. But now I feel I'm getting on and... That has come to a head because she's been asked to represent herself very publicly and she no longer knows how to represent herself. And that is something that I can chime with, which is, you know, my body has changed dramatically in the last 7 years of my life. And I can't even wear the things now that I was wearing at the early days of my transition. You know, because of my internalized ageism, because my body has changed, I've gained weight. You know, it's kind of, you know, that to me is a much more interesting feminist conversation than just, should we judge a book by its cover? You know, Carrie's kind of question hints at, is judgment a good thing that sort of keeps us safe? Is it like an early alarm system that stops us from making mistakes? However, what that has to do with book covers is literally, I guess. I did like, while we're on clothes, I did like, very stylish and classic, I liked Charlotte's bookshop look. The black Ralph Lauren jumper with the pink horse. I would wear that, I think, as I enter my...
I did enjoy Charlotte in the bookshop in general. Travel.
Mm-hmm. Travel.
Travel.
Yeah, it was nice seeing it like strop around the self-help aisle, wasn't it, a little bit? And it was, and it also is that that also kind of really aged the episode for me. Is when they showed all those book covers from like the noughties, I was like, wow. Because the girls themselves, they kind of can be quite timeless at times. But at those book covers, I was like, no, this is definitely over 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then like something that so dated it for me as well was when it was, the voiceover was like, who needs the self-help aisle when you can go to Amazon.com? And it's like, fuck bookshops then.
Well, you forget. You truly forget. Now, so I think there's a couple of things in this episode that are really interesting. One was how Charlotte ruined the world by introducing Amazon to the mass market. Which at that point, remember, Amazon was just an online bookshop. Like, it didn't sell anything else but books. I've just checked when it started expanding out into other things, which is about 2005. So this was when Amazon was literally a bookshop. It is clearly a product placement in that they talk about the benefits and features of using Amazon. Yep, fuck Barnes & Noble. And also, the other thing that I think was interesting was, sorry to go back to Carrie and Samantha, but was this the beginning of the end in that this was the first time Samantha offered her professional skills to Carrie for free? So they're very strange blurring of professional and personal, which, of course, in the end, culminates with Carrie sacking the woman she hadn't properly paid.
Oh, yeah, and should, just like that.
Should Samantha Jones unionise, is what I'm saying. And when you ask your friends to work with you for food and drink, is that something Samantha should have been offering? Was there a contract?
Oh, yeah.
It was the beginning of the end of both capitalism and friendship.
Sex
in the City.
Sex in the City is directly responsible for capitalism.
That's well,
the start of Amazon and everything else.
Although, I mean,
global warming. You could keep going. We could keep going.
Yeah. Although, again, it's Sex in the City. There is a whole dissertation to be done about the capitalist propaganda within Sex in the City. Those films are about shopping. Like, I go shopping for labels. I go shopping for love. As
labels and love
tells us. Yeah.
I wondered if Weight Watchers was product placement as well, maybe.
Yes!
Yeah.
Definitely. The only sensible choice is Weight Watchers.
Yeah. And then you meet a guy, like, I mean, I suppose it all ended badly, but...
let's talk about Miranda, Big Bun Tom, and Weight Watchers. Mm. Lots of interesting things to talk about with this one. First of all, let's talk about Weight Watchers. I have never done Weight Watchers myself. I know lots of friends who have, and my mum was an adherent for much of my childhood as well. I would say to our listeners, go and listen to the Weight Watchers episode of Maintenance Phase, I would highly rate this podcast. It's Michael Hobbs and Aubrey Gordon. They talk about all sorts of things about the sort of health and wellness market through a very critical lens. I've learned so much about diet culture and the diet industry from Michael and Aubrey. I'm sure I think I'm preaching to converted. I'm sure a lot of our listeners also listen to Maintenance Phase. And the Weight Watchers episode is really damning. Like, it's that kind of focus on numerical calorie counting, or in their case, points counting, is very problematic, and it is a little hop, skip, and a jump into sort of very disordered eating, because you're kind of bartering. So you're basically denying yourself, like that quite chilling phrase in the script that had obviously been too legal, with the bookseller unprompted saying, you can even have dessert. Yeah, that's the problem. But you have to deny yourself the rest of your food in order to have your slice of cheesecake, you know. So it is very culty, you know. Oprah threw her weight behind Weight Watchers literally as well when she lost a bunch of weight with Weight Watchers, and so it has kind of become this real movement. But what's the problem here is that Sex and the City presents an entirely uncritical depiction of Weight Watchers. It's just this miracle cure where obviously, I don't know if Miranda was wearing padding for season 5 or if it was the baby weight that she had in real life gained when she had her child. But obviously we notice the weight goes really quickly. So it's kind of, yeah, it's now, I think, given that one of the things we do at this podcast is we kind of re-examine through a slightly more critical lens. It was interesting to hear Tom and Miranda talking about the other diets, like the cabbage soup diet gets a mention.
Mm.
I think he mentions one of, what was it? He says he eats egg and melon or something.
Yeah, is it like egg and watermelon or something? It's like an egg and a fruit. And I was thinking, I actually thought about what that would be like, and I just thought, that is, oh no, that is a bleak existence.
Mm.
And I found it, the thing I found most jarring about this storyline is, like, of course, like, everyone sees their own weight differently, and how I see Miranda's weight is might be different to how Miranda saw it if she were a real character. But the thing I found the most jarring is, through my eyes, I was watching a storyline, an overweight storyline, a weight loss storyline about someone who is not overweight. That was, I think a sign of the times as well. Like, I think last week, Juno, we discussed, like, the 90s body image.
Mm. Well, the lollipop women, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just interesting, really interesting now, just to compare what was considered fat, and she calls herself fat, what was considered fat then.
She's baby, was she Miranda baby weight? Yeah, Miranda baby weight and Tom big boned.
It just feels... Do you?
Put a beard on that man and he's right up my street. He's a bit wonky. He looks like he enjoys his food. Yeah, I'm here for it. Yeah.
Mm. I mean, I was going to say also, this seems like a storyline that it was reminiscent a little bit of kind of the recent stuff and just like that, because it was like, they just bring it in 1 week and then it's gone. Like, yeah. there's no further development. If Miranda's unhappy about her weight, surely it would be a much longer conversation than, you know, a small kind of like, exchange with Charlotte in the bookshop while she's eating, kind of like, what is she eating in the bookshop at that point? Like, that she's shaming herself about. It's like a biscuit or something.
Yeah, it's well, it reminded me of those Kinder, you know, those Kinder sticks. What are they called?
Like a Bueno.
Like, yeah, Kinder Bueno.
I think it might have been something similar, yeah. But again, food shaming. Oh, God, no. Again, listen to Maintenance Phase. It will change your life. get some lovely science and facts in your brain. Good times.
But well, let's talk about the juicy bits.
Let's talk. I was going to say, let's talk about the thrills. Obviously, I've picked an entirely different problem out of this storyline. I don't think they thought it was a problem, but it's a problem. So let's talk about the problem they present to us, which is Tom. God, well, how to describe it? He has excess vaginal fluid on his face. I don't really know how else to put it. I mean,
and then he kisses Miranda afterwards, and she's like grossed out by it. I was surprised by this. I was surprised when I first watched it, and I'm still surprised now. Like, I feel everyone's different, but I feel like during sex, like, these kind of things, it might happen and does happen sometimes. And you kind of, I don't know, like, you're ready for it. Or I am, anyway.
I agree with you, Dylan. Yeah. I agree, because if a guy's licked my bum and then kisses me on the lips, like, I'm fine with it because I know I've cleaned. What's the big deal?
Yeah.
I can't. Well, okay, so I'm going to be devil's advocate because I know. No. It's not. That
Come
is
on,
not
Juno.
No. I know my mother-in-law listens to this, but B, also, no, I just wouldn't, because, like, obviously, very quickly, you join us in a new corner, it's rimming corner, and although we've covered rimming on this podcast before, of course, that the marathon, Mr. Marathon, like, took his lingus.
I don't want to do that.
And, yeah, no, I wouldn't, I couldn't, even knowing my bottom, my tuchus would be sparklingly clean and douched. No, please, no. I do not want, even indirectly, my bottom to make contact with my mouth. This is not the human centipede or whatever it's called. Stop. But in terms of, however, after oral sex, yes, fine, 100%.
Yeah.
I think, and again, we never get the answer to that, because I think Miranda does question, you know, if the tables were turned, I would be offended. If she had gone down on a guy and then he wouldn't kiss her, she would be offended. Do we think this has something to do with kind of This episode was co-written by Michael Patrick King and a woman.
Mm.
Does this have undertones of slight self-loathing around particularly sort of vaginas? You know, there's a whole industry around trying to get women to hate the smell of their vaginas, the look of their vaginas, all the things, the hair growing around a vagina is something to be scared of as well, you know, kind of. And that, there was a little bit about this, around this, which is that, you know, the fact that he had, like, vaginal fluid around his face was presented as being disgusting. Like, a perfectly normal feature of a cis vagina.
Yeah.
Is and kind they of kind ridiculed. Of,
they kind of made it look disgusting as well. Like, even though I'm so not squeamish about that sort of thing, just the way that the scene was presented and his, like, facial expression and stuff when he was, like, coming up to her, I was a bit like, ugh. but that's not in any way because I'm like the opposite of someone who has a fear of things like that. But you're right. I think that was the way it was deliberately presented.
I mean, it seems like Miranda was obviously having a really great orgasm and a really great time. So why can't she just take the fact that, okay, she just has to give this guy a little peck on the lips and then he's happy, right? It's just like,
I love when they're describing it to Charlotte and they like put it to Charlotte and you expect her to be all shocked and stuff. And she's sort of like impatient. She's like, oh, well, of course, like you have some tissues by the bed and he subtly taps his face.
Do you know what it also reminded me?
Samantha's amazing. When I was a lesbian, I could get in and out with just the finest lip gloss. Amazing.
I was going to mention that. And also this was reminiscent for me. Wasn't there also a storyline at some point? With Miranda, I think it was, when she was having sex with somebody and then he got into the shower, he always had to have a shower really quickly. And she was always really pissed off about that. It's kind of like the tables turned, right?
That's true. That was back in, season one. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I think continuity has gone at this point. It wouldn't work. The continuity has sailed out of the window. But yeah, no, and I felt really sorry for poor Big Man Tom until he does have, you know, his sulky tantrum when she does quite politely ask him to wipe his face is also a bit RTT as well.
I love when she's like, you're good at it. Bon appetit.
Oh, yeah, and Carrie's so unsympathetic. She went out with an overeater. Any overeater? Ah! No, mean. Judgmental. See, she is judgmental.
It's one of the things. It's one of the things Sex and the City rightly gets made fun of for the most is when one of them makes like a really average pun, and then everyone around the table's like, "Ha!" Like losing their shit over it.
I'm gonna say, and I understand now. Again, we need a womb in the room. Hi, it's fine. We've got Bethany Rutter on next week. It's going to be fine. But from what I understand, is not all straight men are willing to do cunnilingus. It's apparently there are some men who are just not down for that. So possibly Miranda should have been more willing to train Tom with his glaze, with his sexual facial glaze. She loves glaze on a donut, but not on a man.
I was going to say, I just related it back to that, to glazed, donuts.
Do you know, and it's so funny, after all these years, and I know what they're doing. I still, every time I see this episode, I really want a Krispy Kreme donut, because no one else does glaze like Krispy Kreme. We are not sponsored by Krispy Kreme. We've got so much product placement in this episode. Hang on, we've got Amazon, Weight Watchers, Krispy Kreme, Barnes & Noble, although I didn't see any branding for Barnes & Noble, so I think, although I know they did, that was at the Union Square Barnes & Noble where they filmed. But
Balenciaga got a mention as well. Yeah, this is when it starts to get insane, I think. Like season six, like the fashion brand, it all just comes flooding in, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Although there is, have you guys seen that super, there's like a super cut on YouTube of every time a brand is mentioned in Sex and the City?
Oh my God, no, like, I'm gonna.
It's like 20 minutes long. It's like insane.
That's a full episode. Yeah, that is one whole episode of Sex and the City.
And it's just all of them going, Fendi, Virgin Airways, Balenciaga, Manolo Blahnik.
Like, hang on, is that just in the films? You could probably get 20 minutes out of just the films, actually.
Yeah, probably.
The scene, because I'll tell you what, the scene with Carrie in the first shoot, so we're just all over the place this episode. The scene with Carrie in the first shoot is kind of recreated in that really cringe scene in Sex and the City, the movie one, where she's trying on all the wedding dresses. And with Fergie's backing in, click, clack,
flash.
Click, clack. Yeah.
And she's
Oscar
like,
De La Renta, Oscar. Valentino,
Vivian Westwood.
Vivian Westwood.
deranged.
Unhinged scenes, honestly. Okay, let's bring it on home as we attempt to answer the question, should we always judge a book by its cover? And I say we can answer this however we want. That's the rule here on So I Got to Thinking. We can apply it to anything we see fit. So Rhiannon, should we judge a book by its cover?
I would say yes, because I do always judge books by their covers.
That is such a literal interpretation. Yeah, true, same, actually, 100%.
So I'm interpreting it on a bit more of a wider spectrum. So I'm going to say, in terms of like people, situations, I'm going to say we shouldn't, but we often do involuntarily, because that's human nature, and that's fine, but we should acknowledge that we're doing that and we should try not to.
100%, because of something called unconscious bias.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it doesn't matter how switched on you think you are, we all carry a lot of unconscious bias around with us all the time. And I think that's the problem. So you're right. I don't think we should feel guilty about judging a book by its cover. But what we must be aware of is the kind of the privileges and the presumptions that we carry with us. Gosh, if only Carrie Bradshaw had such insights. But she doesn't. So, I mean, God, imagine the column she wrote about this one. And in the end, my friend realised that seeing a blowjob is traumatic.
I would just on the subjects of blowjobs, how great is it though to see Stanford receiving a blowjob and be really happy about it, and just to look Samantha in the eye with zero shame at all?
Oh, see, I found so that good. A bit, I just found that a bit creepy because I find Stanford quite sexless. So that's more of a Stanford related issue. Although then, what the fuck was that about when Samantha and Carrie are shocked at the notion that Stanford would be receiving a blowjob? Does she think bottoms don't do blowies or something? I don't know.
Well, that's also like a conversation around like maybe like feminine gay men always being perceived as being a bottom, right?
Yeah.
So that, and which is probably not the case always.
No,
so.
No, absolutely not. No. What did you make of that, Dylan? What were you slightly startled?
Do you know what? I was just like, because I remembered it. I remembered that line was in there, and I was just like, oh, do you know what? Like, considering all the other shit that's happened in this episode, like, sure, Jan,
and Rhiannon,
yes.
Obviously, we've told everyone about your books, The New Girl and Help, I'm Addicted, which are in all good bookshops now. What else are you working on at the moment?
I'm actually learning German at the moment because I do live in Berlin.
You've been here for some time now. Hang on.
Don't
this
rub
podcast
salt
is it. Sponsored by Duolingo.
Don't rub salt into the wound. I know I've lived in Berlin for 6 years and I'm only just learning German. Aside from that, not much actually is the true answer. Really not much.
Great.
I'm very it's interesting, and I've used them in my book since. I'm obsessed with, on if you follow Rhiannon on social media, she often posts about her gong baths which she runs. Yes. And I really want to go to one. It looks like just the most extraordinarily relaxing experience. Can you tell us about that? Because I'm just intrigued.
That's true, Juno. Thanks for bringing that up. Yes, I facilitate sound meditation in Berlin, which essentially is people coming to a yoga studio, lying down, chilling out while I play a variety of instruments, one of which is a gong. And it really allows you to access a deep sense of relaxation and peace in a meditation much quicker than you would be if you were maybe doing meditation through your breath work or something. So actually people leave within an hour and just completely transform, because it kind of rejuvenates so much. And just kind of gives you some space to kind of, if you, whatever you bring to the session, you will be allowed to work through, if that makes sense. So they're very relaxing, I suggested.
As somebody who really, really struggles to switch off, I think I need to look into that. God, I do. I live near enough to Brighton. There must be something happening in Brighton.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, for sure.
There has to be. Thank you so much for coming on So I Got to Thinking. I know it's been a long time. Thank you very, very much for finally coming on.
Well, do you know what? I really got into this podcast during lockdown because it was such a kind of like ritual. Every Tuesday morning, I would have a bath and shave my legs and listen to the podcast. And it was just like normality happening when everything else was falling apart and you just did not know from one day to the next what was going to happen. So thank you for inviting me. And it's been an absolute pleasure to be here.
Oh, thank you for coming.
Mm. Yeah, and you are not alone in that. I know a lot of listeners found us during that first big lockdown as well. So world, you're welcome. While we still have breath and the ability to kneel, we will be here doing this podcast while Michael Patrick King is still writing those episodes. Unfortunately, we're being held hostage. So,
hey, it's J. Diaz.
I'm not ready. I can't go back.
We've got round two this winter. Here we go again.
Oh. Rhiannon, will you come back on for an I'm Just Like That season two, please?
Yes, definitely.
Amazing, right? We're going to hold you to that. You're being held hostage by the whims of Sarah Jessica Parker as well. Fabulous. Okay, then we will see you next week on So I Got to Thinking when we do mathematics, because we're going to learn that plus one is the loneliest number.
Oh, no.
Just brace yourselves. And we'll be joined by one of my friends, author Bethany Rutter. We will see you next week. Until then, bye for now.
Bye.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.